Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. About 3 hours west of St. Louis, right by the Lake of the Ozarks, the village of Sunrise Beach is home to fewer than 500 people. Among its residents is Tanya Haddix, a former nurse turned exotic animal broker. Tanya is a sort of celebrity because of a former animal celebrity she owned, a chimpanzee named Tonka. And her notoriety came because of what she did and said after the animal rights advocacy group PETA succeeded in securing a court order for Tanya to surrender Tonka and six other chimps in her care to a PETA-approved primate sanctuary where they would be properly cared and provided for. But when rescuers, alongside sheriff's deputies and the U.S. Marshals Service, came to transfer the chimps to their new home, there were only six chimps at the facility. Haddix claimed that Tonka had died. PETA challenged the story, saying Tanya's inability to produce evidence of the chimp's death suggested that she'd actually hidden him away somewhere. Then in 2022, PETA got the proof it needed, a recording of a phone call that proved Tanya had been lying about Tonka's death. Soon after, Tonka was discovered in Haddix's basement in Sunrise Beach, near Lake of the Ozarks. Talking with producer Emily Woodbury yesterday, Tanya Haddix said she regretted lying about Tonka's death.
At the time, I had no idea that PETA would not claim victory with the six being taken out of there. And whenever I said Tonka was dead to them, I underestimated their behaviors, their erratic, crazy behaviors. And I just had no clue that they would have challenged that any further. So then it put me in a different position, and I felt like I had no choice. But do I regret it? Absolutely.
That phone call is a shocking moment that's highlighted in the new HBO docuseries, Chimp Crazy. In that same call, Tanya also claimed that Tonka was in a state of congestive heart failure and would be euthanized on June 2nd. Yesterday, Tanya told our producer Emily Woodbury that she was trying to deceive documentary filmmakers when she said the chimp was scheduled to be put down.
That was never going to happen at all. That was just something that was said because too many people knew about the situation, and I wanted the documentary crew to think that he was gone.
Joining me now to talk about chimpanzee and primate ownership in Missouri and throughout the U.S. is someone who is featured in Chimp Crazy, PETA lawyer Brittany Peet. Brittany, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Brittany, when you were first brought on to this case, what was your initial reaction to learning about the conditions at Missouri Primate Foundation, which is the animal breeding facility formerly known as Chimparty?
PETA was shocked by the conditions in which chimpanzees were kept at the Missouri Primate Foundation, where chimpanzees were held in tiny enclosures that were strewn with days' worth of feces, built up of urine and old moldy food, cockroach and fly infestations. In one animal welfare inspection report, U.S. Department of Agriculture inspectors described the stench of urine in one of the chimpanzee buildings being so strong that it burned their nostrils. Mm-hmm. And that was just after a few seconds of being in that environment where the chimpanzees live 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. So, Brittany, what was the linchpin in PETA's case to transfer the chimps to a sanctuary?
Well, PETA and Tanya Haddix and Connie Casey actually executed a settlement agreement. And under the terms of that agreement, at that time, there were seven chimpanzees remaining at Missouri Primate Foundation. And Tanya Haddix was actually going to be allowed to keep three of them if she could construct an appropriate enclosure, hire appropriate, experienced employees, and form a nonprofit all within a specified amount of time. Tanya agreed to that. She signed the agreement, but she utterly failed to hold up her end of the bargain. And so under the terms of the agreement, PETA was then allowed to transfer all seven of the chimpanzees to an accredited chimpanzee sanctuary in Florida. Mm-hmm. But of course, as we saw in the series, when we showed up to rescue the chimpanzees, Tonka was missing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the name Connie Casey. Can you tell us who she is and what her relationship to Tanya Haddix is?
Connie Casey was the owner of Missouri Primate Foundation, which was previously called Chimp Party. And that facility, which was located in Festus, Missouri, was the primary breeder of chimpanzees for the pet trade and the entertainment industry for about 50 years. And Connie Casey was the original defendant in our lawsuit, along with Missouri Primate Foundation. And Connie, in a failed attempt to try to get out of the lawsuit, transferred ownership of the chimpanzees to exotic animal dealer Tanya Haddix. The idea was that if Connie or Missouri Primate Foundation no longer owned the chimpanzees, then PETA's lawsuit would be moot. But instead, we simply added Tanya Haddix as a defendant as well, and the case continued.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to 2021. That was when six chimpanzees were removed from the facility, but Tonka was missing then. What is it that made you and your colleagues so certain that Tonka had been hidden somewhere?
Well, one, we had had a lot of dealings with Tanya Haddix by the time that happened. And one of the things that we knew for sure is that virtually every word that comes out of Tanya Haddix's mouth is a lie. We knew that she felt that she had a special bond with Tonka, so it was awfully convenient that he was the chimpanzee who suddenly had died. And also at the same time, PETA received an affidavit that was signed by a man named Jerry S. Wiegand, whom we later learned was actually Tanya Haddix's husband. And in that affidavit, he claimed to have burned Tonka's body at 160 degrees Fahrenheit, and that all that was left was fine ash. Now, of course, they later claimed that the 160 degree temperature was a typo. But even assuming that to be true, a simple Google search makes clear that even if you burn a body at that temperature on a funeral pyre, there's going to be a significant amount of bone left. The story simply didn't make sense. We knew that Haddix was a liar. And so we stayed on the story and we did absolutely everything that we could until we found Tonka.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tanya was very adamant about how she felt, about the relationship that she had with Tonka. What is your experience around human caretakers and their bond with their chimp? I mean, is it common for them to say that they have that kind of a connection with their primate?
It's extremely common. And these people, like Haddix, they claim to have this amazing bond and they claim to love these animals. But you also have to look at the objective facts. Tanya took Tonka away from the family, the chimpanzee family that he had been with for decades, and she locked him in a basement. She denied him the ability to feel the sun on his body, to breathe fresh air, to feel the grass on his feet. She denied him appropriate veterinary care. She fed him garbage. And that's not love to me. That's neglect and abuse and torture for a chimpanzee to be held in solitary confinement like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tanya follows public information about Tonka's life. Tonka's now at Save the Chimps facility in Fort Pierce, Florida. And she told our producer, Emily Woodbury, that she's concerned about Tonka's well-being as she feels he would be better suited to live with people rather than his fellow chimpanzees.
Why do you feel like you have to go in and change a chimpanzee's lifestyle that has been for 30 plus years, because you guys feel, or other AR people, or what I call animal rights AR people, feel that that's a need to do that, when in essence if they feel so strongly that he's okay where he's at, then I seen some footage that the film crew showed me where they went down to save the chimps, and Tonka was sitting rocking on a blanket. And if you just Google what a chimpanzee that is neurotic or unstable, what the first behavior is, rocking on a blanket is the first. So your guys' interpretation that he's doing okay is not my interpretation of what that he's doing okay.
Brittany, what occurs to you as you hear Tanya say that?
I give absolutely no credence to anything that she has to say about Tonka's well-being because Tanya isn't a primatologist. She has no education in the care or husbandry of chimpanzees. She is a chimpanzee enthusiast. She was around chimpanzees for a couple of years, but she really has no idea what she's talking about. The reality is she was keeping Tonka locked in a basement away from any other chimpanzees. I have been to Save the Chimps and seen Tonka myself. And he has gone through an incredible rehabilitation process. He was subjected to incredible physical and psychological trauma under Tanya Haddix's care. And so it's no wonder that he would have a process of rehabilitation as a result of that. But he now lives in a social group with 17 other chimpanzees, and he's now a chimpanzee. He roams with his group and he grooms, and he's a high-ranking member of his chimpanzee society. And instead of watching Instagram videos of chimpanzees every day, he's part of that society with other animals who understand his language and his culture, and that is the best possible outcome for Tonka.
Mm-hmm. Now, Tanya Haddix, she lied under oath, but has yet to face serious legal ramifications for her actions. Brittany, why is that the case?
Well, that's a question that we're asking, too, and it's why PETA, after I saw the series in an early screener in July, wrote a letter to federal authorities outlining the evidence that is in the series from Tanya's own mouth, confessing to her crimes. She's shown committing perjury in a federal hearing over Zoom. And especially now that her outrageous perjury has been broadcast to an international audience, she absolutely must be made an example of. She needs to be charged with perjury and obstruction of justice, and so do her co-conspirators, her husband and Cy and Connie Casey. Because otherwise, why would any defendant in federal court ever tell the truth when they see someone who committed such egregious perjury and contempt of court like Tanya Haddix was able to get away with it?
Mm-hmm. Now, because PETA has asked the U.S. Department of Agriculture to terminate Tanya Haddix's Animal Welfare Act license, and that's a license that allows her to operate her Missouri zoo called Sunrise Beach Safari, this permit is one that does enable her to sell exotic animals through her business, primarily Primates LLC. Now, Tanya did say that her attorneys are ready to push back against PETA's request to terminate her Animal Welfare License, Animal Welfare Act license, which again allows her to operate her zoo in Missouri and broker exotic animal sales.
I don't want to see that happen because I've never had any deficiencies or write-ups, so I think that is rather harsh. I just feel like that's unjust for them to be able to do that, so I hope that does not happen. But if it does happen, I have other people that's willing to carry license, so is it going to affect me overall? No. Nope.
So why is it that PETA has taken this step to have the U.S. Department of Agriculture terminate that license? And what would taking away that license effectively do?
Well, it's clear to anyone who saw Chimp Crazy that Tanya Haddix has absolutely no business near any animal, let alone exploiting vulnerable infant exotic animals and monkeys for profit, which is what she's doing. And so PETA has called on the USDA to terminate her license. The agency actually made a finding we found through a FOIA record last year. They found that Haddix is unfit to hold a license, and they've recommended that her license be terminated. Unfortunately, they haven't taken action so far. Again, like the perjury charges, I think that the momentum from Chimp Crazy and the sheer egregiousness of her actions, both in lying to a federal court and the extremely reckless and neglectful manner in which she treated this chimpanzee Tonka, I think the USDA isn't going to be left with a choice. And it's interesting, listening to Tanya just now, she said that there are other people willing to hold licenses for her. Well, that's another admission of a conspiracy to violate the law, because it is actually, it is illegal for another license holder to circumvent the termination of another person's license. So mm-hmm. we will make sure to flag that for USDA and let them know that when they do terminate her license, that she intends to try to circumvent that license and engage in these regulated activities illegally.
Mm-hmm. Now, as we mentioned at the top, you're featured, Brittany, in Eric Good's HBO docuseries, Chimp Crazy. You also appeared in Good's series, Tiger King. And these are documentaries that highlight issues with the exotic animal trade, but they're also made for entertainment purposes. So do you feel that Chimp Crazy does a good job, that is, of showcasing the exotic animal trade, exotic animal encounters, and the stories of people who own chimpanzees as pets?
The great thing about Chimp Crazy is that it's teaching people about the horrors that go on in this industry and the horrors that animals suffer at the hands of people like Tanya Haddix. But it does also have entertainment value. And so it's not just people who are already in the animal welfare movement who are watching these series. They get massive audiences. And what we saw with Tiger King was a massive amount of momentum that PETA was able to capitalize on to get federal action against the villains who were portrayed in that series. And now nearly every single one of the exotic animal owners featured in Tiger King are out of business, in prison, or facing federal charges. And we were also able to, with many other animal welfare organizations, to get the Big Cat Public Safety Act passed as a result of the momentum from Chimp Crazy. As a result of the momentum from Tiger King. And so we are ready and working on capitalizing on the momentum of Chimp Crazy to see legal action against Tanya Haddix and the other abusers featured in Chimp Crazy, to seek rescue for chimpanzees who still need our help out there in the United States, and to get the Captive Primate Safety Act passed in Congress, which is a federal bipartisan bill that would prohibit the private ownership, breed, and commercial activity in primates used as pets in the United States.
We need to take a quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about the case of Tonka, a chimp who once starred in Hollywood films and later was found locked in the Missouri basement of an exotic animal broker featured in the new HBO series, Chimp Crazy. We're speaking with Brittany Pete, who's a lawyer for PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I'd also like to introduce another voice to this conversation. Bob Baker is executive director of Missouri Alliance for Animal Legislation, which advocates for the humane treatment of animals in Jefferson City and throughout the state. Bob, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, Bob, before the break, we talked about Sunrise Beach Safari, which is a roadside zoo near the Ozarks. And this is where guests can hold sloths, see kangaroos, and feed llamas. Now, these operations often face criticism, more so than larger accredited zoos. Why is that the case?
They really don't have much oversight. That's the biggest problem with all these exotic animal facilities. They only have, for the most part, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which has been very neglectful in enforcement of the act. In fact, just last year, the two highest people within USDA in charge of enforcing the Animal Welfare Act had to resign for their malfeasance on a research lab that they were supposed to be going after that was just absolutely horrendous. So they've had a long, dismal record. And I don't think, to me, that's one of the biggest problems is not just getting laws passed, but getting them enforced after they are passed. It got so bad, believe it or not, for about a two-year period, USDA even ordered its inspectors to falsify inspection reports to protect bad people. And it only stopped because my small organization filed a lawsuit against them. And we didn't go to court, but we did get into a settlement, and they had to stop some of these policies. One of the policies they had at the time is that if you self-reported a violation to the inspector prior to the time the inspection started, they could not be cited for anything that they did, no matter how egregious. Then they started calling, and we did win on the lawsuit. They had to stop that, and they had to tell their inspectors they could no longer falsify inspection reports. But then they continued to call them teachable moments and wouldn't cite them. So we hired a federal lobbyist who lobbied the Appropriations Committee in Congress, and they've been threatened now for the last couple of years that they will lose their funding from Congress if they do not start citing every violation that they come across during an inspection. Mm-hmm. So it's been a long battle just getting really efficient enforcement of our current laws.
Right. Now, at the state level, because Tonya Haddix is located here in Missouri, what is it that Missouri law says, Bob, about keeping primates as pets?
It's nothing. They would just fall under the normal cruelty statutes. In 2010, we did get a law passed to cover large cats. It's called the Large Carnivore Act. And it does give the state the authority to license and inspect anyone's with lions, tigers, and bears. But so then we went back the next year and tried to expand it and include monkeys and chimpanzees and things like this because we knew the continuing problem. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there was just an outcry. We had no idea how many people own monkeys for private ownership. And the hearings were just overcrowded with people fighting it. In fact, it was interesting. One of the people that was there testifying was Connie Casey, who your previous guest just mentioned. And in fact, I still have the inspection report from 2011 because I wanted to show the committee that some of the people testifying had horrible inspection reports from USDA at the time. But the opposition was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. The St. Louis Zoo was a big contributor to helping us. But they were the ones that were pointing out to me some of these really bad people like Connie Casey when she testified, but we just weren't able to overcome that.
Right. And so 2011, that's quite some time ago. Why is it that you think that the 2011 bill to instate a non-human primate act didn't make it out of committee and then wasn't brought up in subsequent sessions?
Because of the amount of opposition compared to the people supporting it. I mean, if you're going to take away someone's right to abuse their animals, they're going to show up definitely more than the average citizen who cares about animals, and that's pretty much what happened. Mm-hmm. I know talking to the director of the Department of Agriculture at the time, who was very supportive of the bill, said he thinks the mistake was that we included all primates, and maybe we should have just stuck to the larger ones like the chimpanzees, because no one had any idea how popular these smaller monkeys are, like the squirrel monkeys, the macaws, and everything. Mm-hmm. So I did try to go back and say, can we rewrite the bill at least to cover the larger ones? But I think people lost their enthusiasm for it.
Right.
After, you know.
So, Brittany, what do we know about how many people in the U.S. own chimpanzees as pets?
Well, we have made tremendous progress on the chimpanzee issue in particular over about the past decade or so. And there are fewer than 100 chimpanzees left in roadside zoos and private homes in the United States. So this is a really solvable problem, but we can't complete the job without our federal agencies stepping in and doing their jobs. Mm-hmm. The smaller primates, it's a much different story. Because of the patchwork of laws across the country, we don't know the exact number, but the estimates of the number of primates in private homes across the United States is around 15,000. Mm-hmm. And the number is growing. And it's just as cruel to keep a capuchin monkey in a private home and a baboon in a private home as it is to keep a chimpanzee in a private home. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's so crucial that we get the Captive Primate Safety Act passed.
So just as final thoughts from each of you, Brittany, we'll start with you. I mean, what thought would you like to leave people with on this topic? You know, what should people be more aware of when it comes to patronizing roadside zoos, exotic animal counters, you know, and keeping exotic animals as private pets?
Well, something that really struck me when I was listening to Tanya Haddix's first comment about her regrets is that she regretted getting caught. She didn't regret what she did to Tonka. She didn't regret taking him from his family, and she didn't regret locking him up in a basement. She regretted underestimating PETA. And I think that a lot of people who see chimp crazy are feeling angry or they're feeling sad. But I want to remind everyone that we can end this industry tomorrow if we all simply stop buying tickets to roadside zoos like Tanya Haddix's.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, how about you? What would you like people to be mindful of, particularly here in the state of Missouri?
I think the most important thing is having them recognize how critical it is that they contact their legislators when these bills come up. It makes all the difference in the world. And I think a lot of people don't think that the legislators pay attention to them, but they really do. And we just need more people on our side contacting the legislators to overcome the opposition that we often face.
Mm-hmm. Bob Baker is Executive Director of Missouri Alliance for Animal Legislation, and Brittany Pete is a lawyer for PETA. Brittany and Bob, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for exploring this topic.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.